what the Iran nuclear deal means for America. And local residents speak out, too. We'll take your calls in a moment. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we want your calls on the Iran deal as we speak with an expert on the region, retired Ambassador Marilyn McAfee. She's in studio, and the number to join us, 549-2937. Then later, why Jacksonville's Schultz Center is expanding statewide, plus country star Robert Earl Keen. All of that ahead. But first this morning, First Coast residents with connections to Iran are expressing optimism about this week's announcement of a nuclear deal with the Persian state. The agreement that was years in the making was struck to keep Iran from producing enough material for an atomic weapon for at least the next 10 years. It also imposes new provisions for inspections of Iranian facilities, including military sites. And the deal is seen as giving an economic boost to Iran. It stands to finally get rid of international sanctions and receive more than $100 billion in assets frozen overseas. Reaction to the deal has been mixed, though, with many Republicans denouncing the agreement, and they also point out there are several American prisoners in the country. This morning, we begin the hour with a closer look at the Iran nuclear deal as we welcome a local expert. Marilyn McAfee is a retired ambassador and career foreign service officer who spent more than 4 years in Iran. She now lives here in our area. Marilyn, a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be here.
And what do you think about the Iran nuclear deal? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. We're also getting your comments on Facebook. What are your thoughts about the deal?
Well, I think you have to start with the president's caveat that this was not intended to solve all the problems. So that narrows the scope and narrows your vision of what it should achieve or what it can achieve. In that narrower scope, there is still criticism that it doesn't cover enough. And criticism that it is not going to be that enforceable. And that gets back to the other important part of this, and that's trust. And I think there really is no place for trust in this agreement, but between the two countries. We've had a very acrid relationship for a long time, and deserved on both sides, I have to say. The Iranian Revolution saw the United States as an enemy, which we were. Certainly our efforts were directed at not supporting the new revolutionary government of the Ayatollahs. According to our national interests, supported Iraq or Iran or both. So it's always been a question of national self-interest, not a question of trust.
What is your reaction to key Republicans, including those jockeying to be the GOP presidential nominee in 2016, denouncing the deal as weakening our security?
Well, I'm not surprised. I think it's unfortunate. But it was bound to split on party lines with an election this close. I'm reminded of the negotiations with North Korea. And the Democrats concluded an agreement with North Korea. And when the Republicans came in, they said, oh, we are not going to be so foolish. We will not be blindsided. You can't fool us. You can't fool us twice. And, of course, North Koreans violated the agreement with that administration as well. So perhaps it should be seen apart, but since the whole object of an election is for one party to win and the other to lose, then I think it's inevitable that it becomes a question of politics. But there are Democrats who are very concerned about this agreement, and I think concern is the proper word, being wary, being concerned. Will they abide by it? And most importantly, will this produce any change in Iran? It certainly is supported by the moderates in Iran and not by the hardliners, who, by the way, are the ones who have control over the prisons and the judicial system. And will that result in any change in the way Iran conducts its business. You have to look at who is in charge in Iran, and that is the Ayatollah Khamenei. He's in his late 70s, but he will be succeeded by another Ayatollah. Who knows which one? But most importantly, his defense of the revolution and defense of his position in as the head of that government, that Persian Islamic government, is dependent on the Revolutionary Guard. That was put into effect very quickly, and its purpose is to defend the revolution. As an outgrowth of that, you had the Quds Force, and the Quds Force, Q-U-D-S, is assigned the job of spreading the revolution abroad and serving Iran's international interests. And that is under the direction of General Soleimani. He is described by Emma Skye in her recent book as the proconsul in Baghdad. And certainly we were well aware of the influence of Iran in Iraq. And sometimes that was helpful and other times it was not. But we did not have the same objectives. Their objective was to have a Shiite-led government. And ours was to have a pluralistic government, and it continues to remain our objective. So we find ourselves again working with and against Iran in Syria, with in the terms of our opposition to the Sunni ISIL extremists, and against because Iran wants to continue the current Syrian government. Which has always been an ally and a conduit for Iran and arms into the Middle East. It's a four-layered chess game.
Yeah, and we'll go to your calls for retired Ambassador Marilyn McAfee, who spent 4 years in Tehran, in just a moment at 549-2937. Also, your tweets and other comments. The Florida Times-Union yesterday, quoting local residents here in Jacksonville, Iranians who now live here, uniformly, they're in favor of this deal. Why so?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I was in Iran recently, just for about 10 days. And I think the sense I picked up, and you can't say that this was a survey of the whole country, the sense I picked up, people you bump into on the street, and just everyday Iranians, was that they would like to be a part of this new or this globalized world. They no longer want to be pariahs. They want to be proud of their country, and they want peace. Now that obviously is not everyone, but I think that's a prevailing sentiment amongst many Iranians, and many Iranians are now very young. This is a young population, and so many do not even remember or were not even alive when the hostage taking occurred. So their sense of belonging to the global community, I think, is very important to them.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu called the deal a stunning historic mistake.
Well, Israel has very serious concerns. It's not that we don't have very serious concerns. Everyone should. But for Israel, they are existential. There has been no let-up in the statements, especially by the Ayatollah Khamenei, of death to Israel and the threat to Israel. And there has never been any doubt in the regime's mind that Israel would like to see the government overthrown. And they have, for very good reason, attacked their nuclear capability. They never take credit for it, but they were probably involved in the assassination of some Iranian nuclear scientists. And they also were a partner and a leading partner in Stuxnet, the attempt to infiltrate the nuclear Iranian nuclear system using cyber warfare. And cyber warfare is another issue that has to be remembered. In some ways, maybe that is more important than an atomic weapon. It certainly is far more pervasive. It can bring down an economy, just attacking the banking system. We've seen the devastation that can be caused. And Iran has an elite core of computer scientists. They are very good at it. And they, the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians are generally the ones that are behind many of these cyber attacks.
Fascinating insights from retired ambassador and career foreign service officer Marilyn McAfee in studio with us this morning. As we go to your calls and thoughts and questions about the big nuclear deal with Iran, what are you thinking about that? Give us a call at 549-2937. Pat is in Fleming Island. Hi, Pat. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. What an interesting time. I am amazed, though not surprised, at the reaction of the right. I'm 65 years old, and my generation, you know, it was at the end of Vietnam, it was give peace a chance. And it looks like we have an opportunity to give peace a chance. Yet the right is almost in lockstep against this thing. And the alternative, it seems to me, is war. We're not going to have any more sanctions. They're going to be lifted by Russia and China if we vote this down. It looks like striking them is the only answer. What I worry about is the next day. That starts another big war. 80 million people live in Iran, a quarter of the population of our country. Once again, we get embroiled in another Middle East war without at least taking the chance. And I just would like to hear a response about that.
Thank you, Pat. Pat Dunn in Clay County, Maryland.
Well, I agree with your concerns, and I agree that it would be wonderful if this does result in a change in our relationship with Iran and greater assurance of peace in that part of the world and elsewhere. I think the resistance is a question, politics, yes, but also a question of whether this arrangement will be adhered to by the Iranians. So there are serious concerns. And
what's your biggest concern?
I think it's the control by General Soleimani and the threat that side of Iran poses, which is the right wing of Iran.
And that they wouldn't abide by the terms of the deal?
Well, you know, their export of terrorism, their export of weapons, none of that was under negotiation. And there's no reason to assume that that will change. And the president's caveat was, look, this wasn't under negotiation. And then the hope is, the caller said, give peace a chance. That is the hope. And it's, as some people say, a roll of the dice.
What about criticisms that have come forth in the last day or two that the U.S.'s leverage has been weakened to get several Americans being held in Iranian prisons out in the wake of this agreement? What do you think about that?
Well, I think you have to understand Iranian politics and the government. The Ayatollah Khamenei is the ultimate authority, and his decision carries. But under his direct control, as I mentioned, is this the Quds force, and also control of the judicial system and the Ministry of the Interior. That means they are in charge of arresting anyone when they want someone arrested, and they are in charge of or in control of those who become prisoners. So I see this as the moderates and the right-wingers, you know, or the reactionaries in Iran playing against each other. Those who opposed this agreement certainly were not going to give up on the prisoners. And will they be released down the road? One, they say they don't even know anything about, which we doubt. So I think the hope is probably by the president that down the road, when it isn't an issue, that something will be done.
549-2937 to join the show as we talk about the Iran nuclear deal with retired Ambassador Marilyn McAfee, now living here in our area. James in Orange Park. Hi, James. Good morning. You're on the air.
I would like to make an observation concerning this agreement, and just to say that I feel that peace should be given a chance instead of having and bombing somebody and killing people. Let's give it a chance, because so many people have given their lives already. And I went in the military service at 17 during the Korean War. And I stayed in there for over 20 years. I was in the United States Marines. And you know, and bloodshed is not a hobby. It's people dying all around you. It's just bloodshed. And I see here in where the Palestinians are suffering, you know, and the Israelis, they've suffered so much suffering. And I feel that Mr. Netanyahu, I feel that he should give this a chance and see if we can't have some peace between factions over there. Well, I mean, this is not a panacea to have a perpetual peace, but give it a chance. Bloodshed is not a hobby. Killing people is not a hobby. Just give it a chance. That's all I have to say.
James in Orange Park.
Well, I think that's very, very important. But going back to your earlier point about war as the alternative, I don't think that really is an alternative for the United States. It's certainly not one that I can imagine that any American wants. So what would bombing Iran's nuclear facilities accomplish? I am not an expert on that, but everything I understand from apparently Israeli generals as well as U.S. generals, it might delay Iran's nuclear capability, weapons capability, but it would not delay it for any great length of time. So I don't think that is an alternative, and that then is the question. What is the alternative? It seems as though this is a part of our alternatives.
Lots of feedback coming in on social media. Here is a tweet from Carter. If nothing else, the deal creates a greater image of the U.S. in Iran. Does this help our relations with the entire Middle East? Marilyn McAfee.
Well, perhaps it does. I'm not sure about that. I think we are not seen to be very strong, either as a negotiator or as a power in the Middle East. So I don't think this is going to be any great enhancement. On the other hand, I think what you can see clearly is the enhancement of Iranian power and influence with the conclusion of this deal.
This strengthens their hand in the
Absolutely.
Region.
Absolutely.
Comment on our Facebook page. Diplomacy, i.e. talking to your enemies and negotiating, is superior to military action. No treaty is perfect. But what are the alternatives? Let's not forget the treaty was also signed by England, France, Germany, Russia, etc. Let's go now to Frank on the South Side. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm driving, so if you hear any background noise, that's what's going on. I wanted to ask your guest's opinion on, what do you think in general about the chances or the national discussion about this deal, considering at least my opinion, that we don't seem in this country, we don't seem to have a nuanced view of what's going on in general in that part of the world. When you hear the buzzwords in the media about Iran being a state sponsor of terror, and anytime you hear anything that goes against U.S. interests in general, they're terrorists. How do you think that this country is going to the citizens overall are going to react to this deal? Do you think they'll be for it overall when all the dust settles? Just what's your view on that?
Thank you, Frank. On the South Side, Ambassador McAfee.
Well, Frank, I don't think there's any question about Iran's involvement in terrorism. You can look at the Khobar Towers in Lebanon, which is definitely laid at the Iranians' feet, and probably General Soleimani. The Defense Department cites the death of some 500 American troops in Iraq as credited to Iranian involvement. And then you have all the way in Argentina, and you have Yemen. There's no doubt about their export of terrorism.
George on the South Side. Hi, George. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Melissa, I enjoy your show so much. I listen to them almost every day.
Thank you.
I want to make a few points, please, quickly. I'm for the agreement. I'm a combat Army veteran of the Vietnam War, and I hate war. I'm a member of the organization's Veterans for Peace, and I think any time we can avoid war, we should, because of the conflicts we've had in the past. And I want to make another point. Look at the government I ran. That's the reason we should keep religion out of government in the U.S. I'm also a member of America's United for Separation of Church and State. And I would like to hear what your guest says about Iran being a theocracy, if she thinks that is good or bad.
Thank you, George. Thank you. That's George on the South Side.
I think that responds to a cultural issue in Iran. The Ayatollahs, or the religious leadership in Iran, has always played a strong political role. So this is not a departure from that. And within the framework of Iranian or Persian Islamic Shiism, that is to say, the Persian Islam, then the kind of control that is represented in this government is perfectly normal, and they do not separate church and state.
It can be hard for us in the West to understand the difference. There is no separation between the religious leadership and the political leadership in a country like Iran.
No, as a matter of fact, it's interesting. When I was there for that brief time, I was told that the enrollment in the religious schools had gone up to over 1,000. So I guess more are on their way.
Now, you lived there, Marilyn, before the revolution. Obviously, it's a different country now after the revolution. But as you've said, and as many who gave their comments to the Times Union yesterday said, I'm going to quote here from the owner of Green Earth Bistro in San Marco. She said that according to her social media feed, young Iranians that she knows in particular say they love this. They're tired of being isolated from the world, prohibited from currency exchanges, travel. The younger Iranians desperately want to become part of the world community and like the West. That may come as a surprise to many Americans.
Well, it may, but it shouldn't. That, in fact, is the case. And very definitely a strong feeling on the part of the younger generation, especially the more westernized, those that are digitally plugged in, as it were, that they want to be a part of this new global world.
But do they have the political juice in Iran? It still seems as though the conservative clerics they have the power.
Well, they do. Yeah. And that's what happened in the Green Revolution. Interestingly enough, most of the leadership of the moderate opposition was clearly identified in the Green Revolution, and many of them have disappeared. So it is there is no real strong leadership there for a change at this point, and it is quickly identified and offed.
And let's go now to Joshua on the South Side. Hi, Joshua. Good morning.
Hi. Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make this comment. I'm of Iranian descent. I've lived in this wonderful country for over 38 years now. Recently went and visited Iran about 2 years ago. As has been reported in the media, 75% of the population in Iran is under 35.
Yes.
That population is yearning to be connected to the West. And if we want to have the isolation point of view of not dealing with Iran, then we're going to have the hardliners take hold in that country more and more. But if we open up dialogue with Iran and start, this is a start, this deal would be a start, then you will see a great change in that country. Look at what has happened just in recent months with us opening dialogue with Cuba, with Vietnam. We lost so many lives in Vietnam War, and now we're having discussion and dialogue with them. isolationism is not the way. The young population in Iran is absolutely all gung-ho about connecting to the West and becoming part of the global community.
A couple of points I would
Thank
like
you,
to make
Jan.
On that.
Sure,
and
you're
Thanks, absolutely
Joshua.
Right.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree with you more, Joshua. But I think you have to look at why did this government allow the moderates to conclude this agreement? Now, we can say that it doesn't cover everything that we really are concerned about, and it doesn't. But I think there was pressure on the regime to move toward the moderate side. Rouhani has been much more successful, let us say, than Ahmadinejad. The image of the government within Iran and outside Iran is much better, much stronger, much more positive. And my sense when I was there is that the internal problems, that is to say, wages, salaries, cost of living, inflation, that all of those factors, plus the psychological ones, social psychological that you mentioned, of wanting to travel and be out of the country, and that all of that was combining to produce a great deal of pressure on Ayatollah Khamenei. And this, I would speculate, is a way to relieve that pressure.
And how long will that relief last? Let me ask you as a follow-up, Marilyn, when you hear Joshua call in and say 75% of Iranians are under age 35, the bulk of the population seemingly at odds with this older, very conservative religious leadership. How long can that stasis hold?
You know, I wouldn't want to predict, but I don't see it being in any trouble at this point. And lack of leadership is just one element. On the other hand, I think that this leadership is perhaps, someone suggested to me when I was in Iran, more mindful of not crossing the personal barriers. You hear of the Persian garden, you hear of the walled home and the kind of intimacy and privacy that you have within that. And that person said to me, you know, the Shah didn't pay any attention to that barrier. But this regime does. They don't. You can say whatever you want inside your house.
You can do what you want. Yeah, and you see on social media photos of young Iranians partying, women not wearing the veil. So that seems to be there's this unspoken agreement that behind closed doors in Iran, you can do what you want.
And that,
right?
That, I think, is the case.
All right.
I would like to mention, you know, the media covered crowds saying down with America and death to America. Those are, whether they're paid or unpaid mobs, that they were not representatives. That was a political show.
Of the whole country. Okay. Richard is downtown and has been holding. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to say, first of all, that I think that the far right are against this because it might give Obama a star in his cap, and they don't want that. And second of all, you know, a negotiation is means that you get some of what you want and the other side gets some of what they want. We're not going to change Iran overnight. And Arabs are very particular about saving face. You know, these Americans are being held. None of us know that there's not a secret agreement that a month or two after this thing has taken effect, that they will be released. That agreement could have been made. That's the first point. And the second point, third point I want to talk about the right. You know, when Nixon reached out to China, I didn't hear any problems with the right. Or when Reagan, when they reached out to the Soviet Union to reduce nuclear weapons, I didn't see any problem with that. This is a political thing. What our president is doing is the best thing they can do, the only thing they can do right now, because Iran was on its path to producing a nuclear weapon, and now we're going to slow that off or take it down. And the last comment I want to make is this. Be careful about what you wish for. If you weaken Iran too much, you know, the ISIS thrives on countries that are weakened, and you got to be careful about that. So there's a lot going on here that doesn't meet the eye.
Thanks, Richard. Let's take one more call. Phillips, one second. Phillips in St. John's County, go ahead, and then we'll close with Marilyn McAfee. Go ahead, Phillips.
Hey, I have two concerns. One, I think the president is trying to get a deal a little hastily while he still has the ability to do so, while he's still president and has time to try to push this through. I think the deal is a little bit hasty. I think the mere fact that Iran is at the table right now, even though the deal may not be as great as everybody wishes, the fact that they're here proves isolationism did in fact work, and that there is a base of people who do want to be part of the West. And the fact that they're isolated is only furthering those people, you know, coming into power. You have this big base of young people that do want to be in power, and the more they're isolated, they're going to put pressure on their own country internally not to be isolated. So I don't think we should put all our cards out on the table and give them access to billions of dollars so that in 10 years they're going to have a nuclear weapon, and every other country knows they're going to have a nuclear weapon in the region. They're all going to have nukes on their own. And, you know, we may be just putting off nuclear war for 10 years. I'll take everything off the air.
All right, Philip, thank you.
I just wanted to make one important point. The Persians, the Iranians, are not Arabs. And
they're Persian.
They're Persian.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
A difference. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a very important difference.
Yeah.
And it's the major difference in Shia and Sunni Iran and the competition between those religious groups in the Middle East. And then I just wanted to say, this is a gamble. Give peace a chance. Well, you know, we probably won't know for 5-10 years whether this pays off or not in any improved or moderated leadership in Iran or relationship. But I think we can expect that Iran will continue to be a threat to U.S. interests for a long time. I don't think that changes.
It's been fascinating to speak with you, and we so appreciate the connection via the World Affairs Council housed in our building. Thank you so much, retired Ambassador Marilyn McAfee. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, later, a conversation with country icon Robert Earl Keane. But up next, why Jacksonville's Schultz Center is expanding statewide.
Fact or fiction? Do seeds or popcorn exacerbate diverticulitis? What is the best diet? Do vaccines cause autism? And does duct tape really cure warts? The Medical Mythbusters session will answer these questions and more. Join us at our annual health conference, Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 15th, Hyatt Hotel. Tickets are only $40. More information at wjct.org/Baptist, good for you, or call 904-549-2938.
This week on Closing the Loop, John Thomas has been cooking his whole life, his mother's recipes and trained culinary work. It's been a sideline since his career has been in healthcare, but that could change. Closing the Loop, Fridays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Last year, Snap Judgment dropped a blockbuster of scary stories just in time for your vacation. And this year, it's back. Campfire Tales 2, Snap Judgment, Storytelling with a Beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back, and it's a major expansion for the Schultz Center. The Jacksonville-based leader in high-quality professional development for educators is expanding with an ambitious statewide strategy. CEO Deborah Gianolis is here to tell us all about it. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. This is exciting news. What's happening?
We really have had statewide work since 2003. And recently, we've refocused our mission. We've really analyzed what are our greatest strengths, what do we have to contribute, and how can we make a great community and statewide impact, and recognize that our work is already recognized in about almost 50 Florida counties, and that we have much more to give.
And by give, let's talk about what the Schultz Center does, because it really is a jewel here in Jacksonville.
It is the only teaching academy in the state of Florida, created in a public-private partnership, opened in 2002. Really, we have identified sort of our three lines of business. Number one is the center, which is in the heart of Jacksonville, a premier meeting and event space. Obviously, our first priority is the education of teachers, continuing professional development for teachers. But it's not likely that teachers are going to be in that building every day, so we now have it offered to the general public as well, and we've expanded into early learning, which is very exciting. So we have a lot of Head Start trainings and things going on, and just today, Duval County's Literacy Expo is going on at the Schultz Center. So the center is open to all educational institutions, nonprofits, and corporate partners, for that matter,
right,
as an event space. And then the Schultz Institute is really how we're defining our high-quality endorsement courses, which teachers need for their certification, customized professional development we do, and leadership training. And then third is EdSpark, which is our innovation initiative, and it's really what we consider the pathway for educators and edupreneurs to develop and distribute their ideas with our help.
And you did that. You've done that at OneSpark. Edupreneurs is a word I think you created out of nothing, which is excellent.
Well, I did have someone say to me, "Is that a real word?" I said, "Yes, it is now."
It is now because Deborah Gianolis said it is. Come on.
And I really discovered that concept through OneSpark because we had a doctoral candidate at the University of Florida who had a fabulous idea in, excuse me, EdSpark 2014. This year, we had an engineer who created a terrific curriculum to expose elementary school kids to engineering concepts. So they are edupreneurs, and I think it's a word that also applies to educators who go the extra mile, who are the high flyers, who develop great ideas and want to share them.
So teachers now from around the state can come to the Schultz Center and really work on their professional development.
They can come physically, but more importantly, they can come virtually. And Melissa, even when we have done surveys with the Early Learning Coalition here in Duval about teacher preference for professional development, 70% of early educators, childcare workers, prefer online. And the reason they do is simply time. We also are expert at taking content and putting it in an engaging, interactive format online. Too often people associate online learning with what they had in college, which was a grad assistant who put up a PowerPoint or a professor's lecture online and called it online learning. What we do is very interactive and engages the learner all the way along.
This is so exciting, and the late Mr. Schultz, who
yes.
founded the center, one of Jacksonville's leading lights. It was his. It's really his vision that's not only come to reality, but it's even more enhanced now than his original vision, isn't it?
It really is, because Mr. Schultz had the understanding of the research, and he knew that the greatest in-school factor in the quality of a child's learning was going to be the quality of that child's teacher. And he wanted the center itself to be a physical manifestation of our respect and honor of the teaching profession. But he also knew that this virtual world was coming. So early on, we were leaders in distance learning, which required setting up really, heavy industrial-looking technology at various sites around our counties and our region, and today can be accomplished through the internet
So he also had the foresight to put a lot of bandwidth into the Schultz Center and for us to develop a world-class learning management system.
Does the Schultz – and the Schultz Center is not only going statewide. You really – you can really service anyone in the country, right?
We really
right?
can. And yeah. that's the great success, I think, of where the world is headed today. There are no borders. And one of the things the Schultz Center was credited with doing early on was breaking down the walls between classrooms, then schools and districts. And we serve private school educators as well. We also serve homeschools and we serve charter schools. So if you're in the education arena, we want to do whatever we can to help you improve your practice.
So it's SchultzCenter.org, and you're now serving thousands of teachers in 50 counties throughout Florida, and much more to come over the next year. Anything else on the radar?
You know, I think that EdSpark is what we are most excited about, because getting back to those innovative roots is really essential for us. But the Schultz Institute, we have a few pretty good ideas that we're working on right now with educators and entrepreneurs that we'll be hearing a lot more about in the near future. And we just want to communicate that we can customize professional development to your needs. We're doing it with Episcopal Children's Services and Lutheran Services Florida, the Head Start provider in Jacksonville, with early learning content. And we are able to do that because of all of our experience in K-12.
Always a pleasure. And thanks for sharing this.
You are so welcome. Thanks for always having me, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Of course. She's Deborah Gianola, CEO of the Schultz Center. And up next, country music icon Robert Earl Keen, as he plays Pontevedra this weekend. Stay with us.
Join us Sunday nights at 7 on 89.9 for classic old-time radio with music, mystery, comedy, and news. It's all at 7 o'clock Sunday nights, only on 89.9.
You got your doll, right? You got your doll there.
Yeah.
You love your doll?
Yeah.
But what if I told you that was the only doll you were allowed to play with the rest of your life?
That's Colin Quinn as a father explaining his infidelities to his children in the film Trainwreck. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Amy Schumer, who wrote and stars in the film, and Judd Apatow, who directed it. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Join us tonight at 11 p.m. for Lost in the Stacks, a collaboration between Jacksonville Public Library and WJCT. We will be mining the library's collection for rare tracks and forgotten albums.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where local artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through July 31st. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
WJCT's new weekend programs are here. Tune in to 89.9 Saturday and Sunday for brand new shows and old favorites at a new time. Join us for True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour, live comedy and music on Wits, and Storytelling with a Beat on Snap Judgment. Learn more and see the new schedule at wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, folk and country icon Robert Earl Keen plays the Pontevedra Concert Hall this Sunday night. Keen is one of the stars of Americana music. I spoke with him about the show and his new album. Take a listen. Robert Earl Keen, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Lots of excitement coming to the Pontevedra Concert Hall. Tell us about the new work, Happy Prisoner.
It's a bluegrass record that I put together. I'd want to make this kind of record for a long, long, long time. Have a lifelong love of bluegrass. So I got together with my friends, Danny Barnes and Sarah Watkins and Lyle Lovett and Natalie Main, Peter Rowan and my band, and we have tracked about 28 different songs, and then we pared it down to 15 songs that made the record. And so far, so good. Everybody's loved it.
It's excellent to see you going out into this genre. You've got such a huge following, as you said. You've collaborated with Lyle Lovett, and your songs range from anthems to ballads. But bluegrass is sort of a new venture for you, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I'm recording. And as far as like in my listening, in my personal life, I've always been a huge fan for, I don't know, since I was a kid. And I have a real, you know, real strong love in my heart for the music itself. But to put it on record, there's nothing like it in all the work that I've done in the past.
Ain't no singing. Can't sing a song till I have water. I ain't wrong. His mind's made up. Gonna stay that way. I got 99 years. One dark day.
And you're coming to a really nice venue. How important is the feel of that for you? It'll be like a pretty intimate setting, great acoustics. It's sure to be an awesome show. And this area has a really strong base for your music. So how important is the connection with the live audience to you?
Well, Melissa, I'm a performer at heart, and I need that connection. And I was a graduate of Texas A&M University, and at Texas A&M they have this myth or this legend of the 12th man. The legend goes that way back in the early 20th century, the football team was on the field, and there are, you know, 11 men on the field, and one of them got hurt, and they were out of men to play football. And somebody came out of the stands and sat on the field and went and played the rest of the game. And that person was just a person from the stand. So I think of the audience is just like that, as the 12th man. They're out there. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the audience, if you can't connect to the audience, it's not really a show.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. We look forward to your concert here in our area.
I'm really looking forward to it. We have, I'm not really sure. I think we've been around there about one time, and I've been doing this for a long time, made a lot of records, and it's a really great show. This is the one to see.
That's Robert Earl Keen, Sunday night at 8 at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall. Tickets at pvconcerthall.com. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a program. Our daily podcast is now up on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, millions of Americans regularly take over-the-counter medicines for minor aches and pains, but the FDA has now strengthened its warning that some of these drugs might be dangerous. We'll discuss the risks and benefits of non-prescription pain relief meds. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Enjoy a little bit more of Robert Earl Keen.
Just burn out on all that talk about the mother lode. I traded for a songbird, a bigger piece of sky. When I miss the good old days, I can't imagine why. Still I get restless and drive into town. Cruise once down Main Street and turn back around. It's crazy, but God knows I don't act my age like an old desperado who paints a town beige.
right along the river, past the swimming hole. You can find your peace of mind with just a fishing pole. And you can walk the river for miles and miles on end, and never stop believing in that dream around the bend. But still I get restless and drive into town. My radio playing, my window rolled down. It's crazy, but God knows I don't act my age like an old desperado who paints a town beige.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.